Hello and welcome to Dateline New Haven and WNHH Radio. And welcome back to summer in the third week or fourth week of September. Kind of hot to figure it out this morning. I'm your host, Paul Bass, inviting you to look behind the headlines on the stories that make New Haven tick. And good morning to New Haven Mayor Tony Harp. Mayor Harp is here in the studio for her regular Mayor Monday checkup on what she and we are up to in New Haven. You can join the conversation by posting a question on our New Haven Independent Facebook Live page or by calling in at 203-872-7356, 203-872-7ELM. Today's program is made possible in part thanks to support from Birch & Moses PC and from Gateway Community College in downtown New Haven. Thanks, Gateway. Thanks, Birch & Moses. And thanks, Mayor Tony Harp, for coming here in the studio. Nice to see you.
Good morning, Paul. How are you?
Good. How's our new system there working? Can you hear in the headphones?
Now I can. It was taking a minute.
Okay. I actually haven't figured that one out yet. But. And so thanks for coming in. And if you don't mind getting the microphone a little closer to you.
Sure. Thank you.
So, Mayor Harp, you were just coming from City Hall, where you had a press conference with Latino legislators and others about the devastation in Puerto Rico and what New Haven is planning to do to help. Tell us about that.
Sure. One of the things that is, as we all know, Puerto Rico is an American protectorate. All of the citizens of Puerto Rico are citizens of the United States. They're all Americans. And the funny thing is, I think a lot of people don't know that. But in fact, they are. When they come over to the mainland, they can vote and have all of the rights of any other American citizens. So basically what they are doing is having on Saturday a collection. You'll see them out on the streets. And we hope that people will give food, non-perishable food items, and that they will also donate resources. There is now a GoFundMe account, and it is at www.gofundme.com/new-haven-4puerto-rico.
Are those dashes or hyphens? Try them both, folks. One of them will work.
Looks like a dash to me.
Okay. They're long, not short. Okay.
Hyphens. Oh, maybe it's a hyphen. Okay.
Often they're hyphens in those URLs, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
So New Haven for Puerto Rico at GoFundMe.
Yeah, and everything has a hyphen between it. So New has a hyphen before Haven. After Haven, there's a hyphen before for, and then a hyphen Puerto.
So is this going to count the city New Haven set up to help people in Puerto Rico?
Well, it's helping the people in Puerto Rico, and it's actually a group that came together of people who live here in New Haven, who have relatives, friends in Puerto Rico that they haven't heard from. One of the things that we did here is that all of the cell phone towers are down in Puerto Rico.
All the electricity's been down. I don't believe you get fresh water.
No fresh water.
The island is just destroyed. They say they might never have agriculture again.
It's destroyed. You know, so many of the houses are made out of wood. A lot of them blew away. Unfortunately, Representative Juan Candelaria lost his aunt in the hurricane, and so many more. He said at least he feels grateful that he knows about that particular relatives, but there's so many people in New Haven that don't know how their relatives are doing and if they're okay. And when you think about the fact that they're on an island, they have no real way to have fresh water. I mean, that's basic.
Okay, so what are they going to do? Because they're airlifting bottled water?
I think they're airlifting bottled water. The other thing, we heard from a pediatrician who was in touch with doctors at hospitals. They've run out of food in those hospitals. Mm-hmm. They've run out of medication. They don't have the water either. I mean, it's just a nightmare there.
Well, this came after a hurricane just a week or two before that.
Harvey, came after Irma. And you know, one of the points that we made was that it's a protectorate. It doesn't have anybody in Congress, you know, beating the drum, trying to, I mean, there's someone there, but they are not full they can't vote, and so they just don't have the kind of advocacy, political advocacy in Washington that would help, I think. They're getting some help, we understand, from the U.S. government. But now remember that the U.S. government first has to deal with Houston, Texas, and Harvey, and it has to deal
Florida.
With Florida and Irma, and they have people in Congress beating the door down and who can vote. And in Puerto Rico, they don't. And so it's really important for people in New Haven to help out the relatives of our friends and neighbors who live here who are in desperate straits.
GoFundMe, New Haven for Puerto Rico. We have a long standing tie with Puerto Rican in New Haven. As you said, there are people here who go back part of the year to live in Puerto Rico. So many of our citizens come from Puerto Rico originally, and it's been a real center of our community, I guess, for what, about 40 years, 50 years?
More? Oh, probably 50 years.
So, you know, this is the new reality. You talked about Florida, you talked about Texas, you talked about Puerto Rico. This is just climate change. I mean, even though any one storm, like you don't know if Mexico's earthquakes or climate change or not, you don't know if any one storm is, the experts all say that the combination of just this devastation is the reality of a new world we're in, and where people like yourself at the local level as a mayor, governors, president, you're really somewhat storm managers from here on in.
Disaster management. One of the things that we did, because we didn't know whether or not any of those storms were going to turn and come up to the Northeast, and so that was, we spent a lot of time trying to make sure that we were as prepared as we can be.
Well, the good news is that we're in late September and we've just started summer, so you don't have to worry after all about these snowstorms this coming year.
Maybe it'll happen in March. That's the only problem. March and April, we'll be getting our snowstorms.
I guess the rule is we have to be flexible.
We do, and we have to always be vigilant.
Anymore.
We have to be prepared. Good girl and Boy Scouts, right?
All right, and also good Mayor Tony Harp is here on Mayor Monday at WNHH Radio, your home for community radio, 103.5 FM, LodgeNewHavenInPenn.org. You can be like Bob and call into the show at 203-872-7ELM, 203-872-7356, or you can go on Facebook, our Facebook page. There's a Facebook Live video you can post a comment on. Bob, you're on the air with Mayor Harp.
Hey, Mayor Harp, how are you today?
Good, how are you, Bob?
I could be better. But
Bob's been in the infirmary since Monday. He didn't know if he was going to be able to call in.
What's the matter?
Yeah, well, I'm in the Yale Health Center infirmary right now trying to recoup with my leg here.
What happened?
And nothing. Just some genetic stuff going on with my leg. But otherwise, the question I actually had for you was about the stalemate, I'll call it, going on with the search for the new superintendent. When do you think they'll be able to move on that, I guess, is my question. And I'll hang up and listen to you.
And Bob, thank you for the call. And Bob, we hope your leg feels better.
All right. Thank you, Bob.
We're hoping it recovers speedily than the Board of Ed.
Okay.
So as we know, the Board of Education has been looking since last October, November for school superintendent. The last few weeks have been marked by serious arguing about how that search will take place. There are six finalists. There's an argument that maybe we should just not have those six finalists start over because there's no one from New Haven. Where does it stand now?
Well, I think that there are a number of us that were really surprised that there was no one from New Haven who was on the list. The other thing that was a little surprising is that they never came to me. I don't know, maybe they went to the other board members. They supposedly went to the community to ask the search firm, what we all wanted in a superintendent from a community point of view. They were supposed to have focus groups with a number of stakeholders. And as it turned out, they only spoke to 41 people, from what I gather, based upon a conversation that I was a part of. I believe that was on Tuesday.
So where's it going to stand now? You half the board is very unhappy with the search committee. Half the board wants to go full steam ahead of the search committee.
It's not the search committee, because the search committee...
the firm you hired.
The search.
Right, the head of the search committee has been removed of his duties by the board president, who used to be his friend.
Yeah.
I mean, he used to be his ally for the first 2 years of this infighting, and now they're at odds, I think, over who should be the superintendent. But in any case, separate from that, which is a lot to be asking our listeners to follow, what's the status? Are we going to continue with the search firm? Are these the six finalists? Are we going to interview them, or what happens next?
Well, I think that, I guess we'll find out at the board meeting tonight. I think there are a number of us that just want to just stop the process and understand where we are, understand how someone got eliminated from an interview, because that was never really clear. They never talked to, at least.
Oh, you mean one of the local people?
No, not the anybody. Because
a lot of people.
Everybody.
So I know Dolores Blocker Garcia, she wants to be school superintendent. Eileen Tracy had her name in. Those are internal candidates who didn't make the cut.
Well, I think there were at least two or three others, but every single one of them had the same 093 designation, which meant that they had the same amount of education, basic education, in order to become superintendent. They were eliminated based upon, again, this sort of faulty process of speaking to 41 people and then some sort of survey of 1,000 people. It's not clear to me that those 1,000 people were New Haveners. And they never came to the board to ask us. At least they didn't come to me, and they didn't come to at least three or four of us. It was clear that they met with the current president, which we basically did not want.
President of the board.
We did not want one individual to be the person who informs how we make the cut. And I think that's the real concern.
Here's a wild idea. Why don't we not have search firms? Why don't we not have a search committee? Why don't we not have a community process? I know, because I'm not in government. I'm not a process guy. What if the mayor just said, just like with the police chief, I want someone from the system. I think this person's good. Here's the next superintendent.
The mayor, as the current president will make perfectly clear, doesn't have the ability to do that. It's a board decision for superintendent. Mayor's just one member of that
board.
But
is it like the police commission where you can submit the name and then they approve it?
No.
Oh, it's not like that?
No.
Wow.
And so the real question is, especially since there were just 45, when I was president, I set up a system early on, right when we knew that Mr. Harris was going to resign, that had the community coming up with, and it had representatives from across the community, parents, teachers, people who work for New Haven Public Schools, to come up with what they think are the special qualities that someone would have. They were going to go out and meet with the community. Well, once I was no longer president, and we were moving forward, we had an interim superintendent of schools, a decision was made, frankly, to just slow walk the process, because I thought, well, let's fast walk it. I was the one that appointed Mr. Goldson as the chairman. It seemed fine with everybody at the time, but they didn't like the fact that I had appointed a community group that was going to assess the community and figure out what the community wanted. And they made the decision to have the search firm do it. Well, I had said at the time that when that was done during the former search, that they were unhappy with that. And so why would we do the same thing all over again? Well, because that's the way it was done, I was told. And, you know, and I just figured it was another way for them to kick me in the teeth and basically say, we're just going to go back to the way that we'd always done it. We don't like your committee. And so
you feel kicked in the teeth?
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's a real strong feeling by the current president that the mayor should have nothing to do with education. You know, I set the budget for New Haven Public Schools. The Board of Aldermen makes the final decision about what that bottom line is. So the whole idea that the mayor should not be involved is a little ridiculous. But that's the feeling of, and you know, of at the time, probably the majority of the board, if they don't continue to feel that way. I think it's absolutely inappropriate. If they had the ability to tax, they could set their own budget and they could set their own tax rate and do all of that. But that's not how it works here.
And someone, just to correct me, listener Robert Gibson wrote in, the Board of Education is a state agency, not a city agency. Did from the police and fire departments. Thank you very much, Robert Gibson, for listening and for posting that comment on our Facebook page.
And he's one of the main ones, you know, like, who really believes that it ought to be separate. But, you know, they can't tax. They may be a state agency, but they can't set a mill rate. There are some school districts in our state who can, and they're dependent upon the city of New Haven to come up with a budget proposal to support that budget proposal when it goes to the Board of Alders, and to help them. I'm the only mayor that I, from what I gather, I don't know what happened with New Haven Public Schools prior to my being mayor, is they just kept losing money because they, you know, I've given them increases every year since I've been here. And, you know, they seem to forget that that has to happen. And, you know, who knows if the state continues down the road it's going, we might not be able to do that. But, you know, the truth of the matter is we're not a district, as some are in the state, that can set its own tax rate. They have to come to the city of New Haven. And you know, I would think that they would want the mayor to be engaged, but they don't. And they've done everything they can, many members of the board and the public, to make it perfectly clear that they resent my involvement, but they don't resent it when it's time for a budget.
Are you going tonight to the Board Ed?
I will be there.
Have fun.
It's always a hoot.
Tom Breen wrote in with a question, Mayor Harp. What will you do to encourage youth empowerment, youth employment, and end youth violence in New Hallville? I guess that's in following up with Saturday's march in New Hallville, where people were, I think that 150 people on those two issues on the street.
Well, you know, one of the things that I did as a mayor, I was told by the Workforce Alliance that gives us the money for our summer youth program that there would be no money and to cancel the program. And I said, no, we will not cancel it, in spite of the fact that we don't have a state budget. And I said that we will pay for that and that we would continue to have our youth paid and youth programs. Now, we're not doing it now because I already overspent $500,000 to assure that we could have this program. And, you know, you get no credit for what you do. But the truth of the matter is that most mayors around the state did not do that. But it's critically important that our young people have work. And we're doing all that we can. Some of what we're doing is looking for foundations and other places. But until there is a state budget, the work that we used to do in the fall and throughout the school year in hiring young people, we just can't do. As it stands now, I'm sure there's some that would say it was an irresponsible move for me to require that we spend $500,000, but we don't know whether or not we're going to get reimbursed. But our kids are too important, I believe, not to do that.
It sounds like you're feeling a little beat up.
Well, you know, I mean, people, maybe it's not that I feel beat up, but maybe it's my fault. Maybe people just don't know what we do. We do a lot in this community that other communities simply don't do. I just wanted to make it clear that, you know, I will stand by my record on youth and supporting youth. And we've done it, you know, call Bill Villano. You know, how many times did he ask me not to do that? I did it anyway.
Well, on that subject, I want to congratulate you on getting 75% of the vote in the most recent Democratic primary.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
I don't know how beat up you were that day. But if you want to talk about getting beat up, imagine you're the mayor or these Democrats who voted with the Republican Party to pass a Republican version of the state budget. We are now the only state in the nation without a state budget for this fiscal year. There's a story in the New York Times today about New Haven's, the impact of New Haven, where the people in Project Longevity have worked 3 months without any pay. They don't know how much longer they can do it. There was a great quote from one guy saying, pretty soon my household budget is going to look like the state budget if I don't get some income coming in. What's it really mean on the ground, Mayor Harp? First of all, the state budget that the Republicans passed with Democratic help, the governor said he's going to veto it. Do you think he should or not, and why or why not?
Well, you know, for years, well, as long as I was in the General Assembly, I sat on the Budget Committee. For 11 of those years, I was chair. And one of the things that when we put together a budget, we don't leave $500 million worth of lapses in the budget. Now, what's a lapse? A lapse is an amount of money that we say we're going to find throughout the year. So in other words, it's a savings that does not exist. And it basically means that you have a hole in your budget that is going to be made up of with cuts in the future. And so therefore, you don't even really know for sure what you're going to have as a department head in the state, as a program that is dependent upon funds from the state. You may get a contract, but then it may have a certain amount that you of a cut that you're going to have to find somehow throughout the year. So in that regard, it was irresponsible. Now, New Haven was getting around nearly $76 million worth of payment in lieu of taxes. They didn't put that in the budget. They put in the budget I think it's around $80 million in between two municipal revenue funds. And so it's not altogether clear to me how much New Haven would have gotten, but if it's just 80 between the two, a little over 80, and we were getting 76, I can imagine that we basically got really harmed by that. And that's for our city budget. The
educational cost
sharing. The educational cost sharing, there was slightly more in that in the overall line item, but we also get priority school dollars. We also get...
So is this the Republican version that doesn't cut us?
It does cut us.
Oh, it does cut us.
It does cut us. It doesn't cut educational cost sharing, but that's not all that we get.
Gotcha. Didn't they shift some money to wealthy suburbs, like what the judge didn't want them to do last time?
Yeah, they did. You know, like, and you know...
So you'd be for vetoing it?
Well, I think that he's got to veto it because it's an irresponsible budget.
So now October 1st, if there's no budget, one thing I don't understand, because I don't understand the way you do, is it necessarily a bad thing on October 1st if there's no budget, if the governor's going to unilaterally cut the wealthy towns around the city so he can preserve the city money?
But he's not really doing that. What he's doing is he's preserving educational cost sharing, and that's just one aspect of what we get. We're not getting the payment in lieu of taxes.
And is he limited? Is he not able to deliver payment in lieu of taxes? That's something only the legislature can do? That's one thing I was trying to understand. When the governor is running the state budget because the legislature hasn't passed the budget, is he limited on what levers he can pull?
The way that they write the payment in lieu of taxes, as I understand it, is that it is within available appropriations. And if there are no available appropriations, he cannot do it. If it was a formula that was just a formula, then he could fund us.
Okay, we have a couple questions lined up here. The mayor, and this is going to be the last education one for today. Why did the mayor say that the majority of the Board of Ed supported waiting until September of next year to select a superintendent?
No, I didn't say that. I think people really misunderstood it. What I said was that in our discussions with board members who'd been on for a long period of time, they said that had they had the ability to wait until September, once they selected someone during the previous search, that they would have gotten someone different than we had had previously. And so what I have said is that we could select someone, but they probably shouldn't start until sometime in the spring, so that they will have time to assess the district and figure out what they need to put in place.
So you're saying select someone, move ahead with selecting someone, but don't rush them to come here the first day they're selected.
Yeah, exactly.
But you're not talking about next September.
No, I'm thinking that the best time would be sometime in early spring.
For starting, but select
for starting, sooner. And that they would do some work with the existing interim superintendent so that they could really understand our system and they'll be ready to have their team in place and to move forward when school starts.
Sometimes we believe we need someone from outside the city or a department to run things. And sometimes we think within, we felt there was a need for the fire department to have fresh blood from outside. On the other hand, we felt there were enough people in the police department who were in place, could keep certain policy. And Oh, and the question you were saying, that's what the Register article stated. I read that Register article. I was very confused by that quote. You're saying the Register article quote did not quote you accurately.
Well, I don't think they understood it, evidently. Yeah, they didn't put it in the right context.
So is this one of these cases where we could just hire from within in the Board of Ed, or do we need someone from outside?
Well, you know, I think that we could just hire from within. You know, one of the things that makes New Haven unique is that we were the first city to do teacher evaluation, to have this. And as a matter of fact, our whole system is the system upon which the state system is built, so that we've done that. We have a system of funding the schools, as I said before, that is different than other places. You have to deal with the mayor, who is on the board, and the board of alders, and you have 30 wards that you ultimately have to deal with. You have a board of education, which is a hybrid form of the board of education. And so it's going to take a lot from somebody on the outside to even understand our process.
So why are we going through this whole big search? Why don't we just pick someone from inside? I know it's not up to you, but I'm just wondering.
It's not up to me.
What would you think of that? What if you went to the Board of Ed tonight and said, hey, why don't we simplify it? We have good people in New Haven. Let's change this process and just interview the people from New Haven who are applying.
I don't know if I would get 100% support for that, but...
Because then those people would have to face the people in New Haven and say, you're not good enough for the job.
Right, which is... You know, and so at any rate, yes.
Okay, let's move on from that. Aaron Good is referring to an article in the Independent last week by Peter Webster, who used to run the downtown Worcester Square management team. And he wrote, she's asking, do you agree with Peter Webster that addiction and antisocial behaviors on the New Haven Green have become out of control and need to be addressed by the city?
Well, you know, I don't think that they're any different than they've been, and we've been looking at it. I think that I talked about this when we first started this whole perception committee that I have had trying to look at the green. One of the things that, and I've talked about transportation on the green and the fact that so many people come into New Haven to get drug treatment, and how we've been working most recently with the APT Foundation to try to figure out what their practice model is and why there are so many people who come here to get methadone from that particular program, hang out on Congress Avenue, and then hang out on our green. And it looks like they have a harm reduction model that allows them to use other drugs as well as methadone. And, you know, we've been very concerned about that, and we have been working on it now for, we started working on it over a year ago with our, the head of our district management over there when it was Roy Davis, and we had Operation Green Thumb. I don't know if you remember that.
I do. You get alternative sentencing that if you get picked up on the green, you help clean up the green.
Right, exactly. And so when he was moved... early this year to over to, I don't know if it was early this year or the end of last year, but he was summarily moved without us really contemplating the impact it would have on the green to over to the East Shore District. And that whole program that we had with, and I believe that the new district officer was very helpful, but we had it was a very complex program that had the state's attorney, the judicial branch working with us. They got new people. And in all honesty, we recognized maybe 4 months ago that it just wasn't operating the way that it was. In the meantime, we've gotten new people over there as district managers. And we are working on it. I have Martha Okafor has met at least 3 times with the Department of Mental Health and Addiction Services, as well as the APT Foundation Executive Director, to see if we can't work out a better way and a more respectful and dignified way to serve these people we've brought in. As a matter of fact, it was part of the discussion that we had with the Department of Transportation around how these programs are sending people from Waterbury, from Willimantic, from all over the state here in New Haven to get treatment, and we have the bus transfer right there on the green. And so we have been working on this. It's a really complex issue to try to work out, and we had made some progress, and it sort of slipped back a little bit, but we're working vigorously on this. And I've got to say that I believe that we will are beginning to get the ear of the Abbott Foundation around how critically important it is that they adjust their practice model, that they treat their patients with more dignity, and that they don't have a lot of people out here on the green and really out on Congress Avenue menacing the young people who are going to school. It's a problem, and their practice model has got to be addressed.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to address the fact that you're listening to Mayor Monday on WNHH Radio, your home for community radio at 103.5 FM, live streamed at newhavenandpenn.org. And I'll listen to you talk about that, Mayor Harp. I've been thinking about how innovative programming requires such follow-up, that people mm-hmm. change in government jobs. And the reasons is sometimes how you develop a program, whether it's community policing or public health models like Free New Deals, that funding changes, what the challenges are, changes, and that you always got to sort of be revising the revolution.
And I think that that's one of the things that we did learn, if there was a teachable moment here. It's that when you have something that is working, you've got to make sure that you keep your eye on it, you've got to monitor it, you've got to continually evaluate it. And when there are changes in personnel, that you've got to understand that you've got to help them understand what the model is so that they can implement it. And when it requires coordination among multiple departments, both city, state, as well as some of our service providers, then we've got to have a mechanism in place to make sure that we're constantly monitoring these programs and constantly working on improving them.
Well, you were in one place this weekend on Saturday, and then unexpectedly you were in another place. You were, I believe, at a African American Mayors Association event?
Yes.
And you're the president of that organization.
I am.
African American Mayors Association?
Yes.
AAMA.
AAMA. AAMA. We call it AAMA.
Was that Baltimore or Washington?
It's Washington, D.C.
And then while you were there, something big happened in your city here in New Haven, mm-hmm. our city. There was a man who shot his lover.
Wife.
Okay, I wasn't sure about that. Mm-hmm. And then he holed up in a house. She got it the help she needed, but he shot two police officers. And then there was a standoff for a couple hours, right? And then the police went in. They shot him but did not kill him and arrested him. Where were you when you heard about that?
I was in Washington, and I got a call from Chief Campbell, and he let me know what was going on. And I had several calls from him throughout the morning, actually, and into early afternoon, from my staff as well, from Tomas Reyes and others, as we sort of were as I was being informed about what was going on the ground. Turns out that the victim was someone who worked with our Youth Stat program.
And as a staffer?
As a mentor, yes.
But not a city employee?
Not a city employee. She worked for New Haven Family Alliance.
Oh, she was a staff employee there.
Yeah, and worked with our Youth Stat folks, was working on a master's degree in social work. In my discussions with Jason Bartlett, it's just someone who we all depend upon, someone who does great work, particularly with young girls. And so it was it was something that really struck us close to our hearts and our homes and right here. So long story short, I felt that it was important for me to come back to get here as quickly as I could to see what was going on. I had heard that there were two officers, Chief Campbell indicated that there were two officers that were down. By the time I got back, they had already been released from the hospital.
And would you fly back?
I flew back, yeah.
And you got back that night?
Late afternoon.
Wow, you're quick.
Around.
You ran right, you're like OJ, right to the airport.
Well, not quite. quite that fast, but yeah, I was able to get back.
Sounds pretty quick to me.
About 5 o'clock.
Yeah.
And then I went straight to the hospital.
And you visited the who did you visit in the hospital?
Well, I visited the family. They were
of the woman.
She was still in surgery. She had been in surgery for many, many.
Where
many
was she
hours.
Hit?
I was told that she was hit. I can't really.
Oh, you can't say
that.
Okay. But is she okay?
Yes.
She's going to survive.
I heard from the social worker last night that she was okay. That she was alert. That she was talking to her family and friends. She has a large family here. They were all there praying and. Supporting one another as she went through that operation.
So you went and saw her when she was getting operated on?
I went to see if I could see her. I thought that by the time I got there that the operation would have been over, but it actually lasted even many hours.
But she's going to survive.
She's going to survive, yes.
And how about the man, the shooter, is he going to survive?
My understanding is that by the time they got into the hospital that he was breathing on his own and that... it looks like he's going to survive as well.
Because all our readers were asking, like, what exactly happened? Because he shot, why did he shoot cops? They were coming near his house or something?
Well, he knew that he had shot her.
Right.
And so he figured they were coming after. This is what I process. I don't know what he was thinking, honestly. And so I shouldn't even guess. But at any rate, when they came to the door, I understand he shot through the door.
Shot through the door?
Yes. I should probably not. Okay,
you don't know that. Okay. It's just everyone was so confused about, like, later. So they went in and then they shot. Was he shooting at them? But I guess we'll find that out when the state police.
Well, you know, the officers who were shot were removed from the scene and then the SWAT team came in.
Yeah.
And they were the ones who were able to apprehend the suspect.
All right. So I guess one thing we're going to be looking at is, and we all, our hearts go out to those officers, they go out to the woman. And we also hope the man who caused it all survives.
Right. The other people that I visited, the SWAT team folks were in the hospital, and so I went to see them as well. And you know, everybody sees what they see on television, and you know, like after something like this happens on television, people are off to the next thing. Well, that's not exactly how it happens. And one of the things at the scene, and people should really know this, that at the scene, the state's attorney's office was there, and that there were a number of other law enforcement agencies, both state and federal, there. And I've got to tell you how proud I am of our SWAT team. You know, most people would think that they should have just taken him down because they get so angry. Well, they didn't do that.
Yeah.
They handled it very professionally, and their lives were, frankly, on the line. And when I met with them, you know, it's never easy to have to make those kind of decisions and to do that sort of thing. And I can't tell you how proud I am of them. And
I mean, the fact that they didn't kill the guy.
The fact that they didn't kill the guy, the fact that they acted professionally, and the fact that I could tell that, you know, it was not a beat my chest moment for these men.
Yeah.
That they are professionals in every sense of the word, and that this was very difficult for them. And
what
this
were they
is
doing?
What we
but they were still in the hospital, even though the officers were gone.
Even though the officers were gone, they had to be evaluated.
Oh, they themselves had to be evaluated.
I believe so. And then they couldn't be released until I believe the state's attorney released them.
Okay, and this is all at Yale New Haven.
Yep.
They had
to take off all their clothes, I guess, and all of that is evidence.
Wow.
It's
what a day in New Haven, huh?
What a day.
Well, my readers want to find out, no one's critical of the cops, really. Even people usually critical of the cops. This isn't about being critical of the cops. Their lives are under duress. As you say, they didn't even kill anybody when they were getting shot at. So I don't think anyone's upset with the cops. What we're going to find out is just the big open question to people is what happened when the SWAT team went in the door? Like, how do you handle a situation? Like, I know you can't say now you don't know. I'm just saying that's what we're going to find out. Like, when the state releases its report, that's what I think my readers want to know.
I'm sure they do. And, you know, I think they'll find it very
interesting. But we'll have time. Well, you know, I'm wondering, I don't know how long they're going to take, but,
yeah.
But when they take over the,
no, the state absolutely took over the scene.
I also wanted to ask you, did you go to the Holocaust Memorial event yesterday?
I didn't get a chance to go because I don't think I got back in time.
Okay. And how about that conference of the African American Mayor Association? So you're the president. What were you doing down there?
Well, you know, one of the things that we do is that we meet with Congress people and that we try to figure out ways to get more support for African American mayors and the towns and cities that they represent.
Mm-hmm. And anything specific coming up?
We're going to be having a leadership conference and a women's retreat here October 18th through 20th.
Really? Yes. Oh, tell me about that.
Yeah, so we are we're inviting all of the, all of the members of the African American Mayors Association, but it's really focused on, the first part is on the women mayors around the country who are our members, and those who aren't, actually, we're inviting all of the African American women mayors to come to this retreat. We are going to then have a leadership summit, which is our business council, our advisory board, and our trustees, and we're going to be looking at various policy issues that impact our mayors across the country. We're going to come up with ways to advocate both in our states as well as nationally to get the kinds of things that we need. And then there'll be some professional development that occurs there. Our last speaker is going to be Mark Mariel, who's the head of the Urban League. It's going to be a luncheon speech. So I think we're going
Where in New Haven is this going to be?
Most all of it will take place at the Omni.
So July 18th to 20th, you're going to be,
October.
Well, summer, that's why I got wrong season. Okay, October 18th to 20th at the Omni, you're going to be hosting African American Mayors Association first women's retreat.
Right.
And then a summit.
Right.
With Mark Mariel at the end from the Urban. That's big news.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, we're excited about it.
That's so I guess as president, you kind of get to bring the business here.
Yeah, every president gets to bring the leadership summit to their town.
That sounds like it's going to be interesting.
Yeah, it should be. And we're really excited. We want to show off some of the things that we think that we do well here.
Tom wrote in on Facebook, what's the latest with the Escape Teen Center? When will that open?
We are in the process of having, as you know, it moved from our youth services department being responsible for rebuilding it to our city engineer. So he's in the process of doing some of the design work that needed to be done, and I think that we're waiting for a final budget from the overall program as well as design and specifications, and it's my hope that sometime this fall they'll begin work again.
And the city's also asks about the city's bike share program. That's also been approved. I know that's in the works.
Oh, that's right, and we're really excited about that. So that you'll be able, there'll be different stations. I know one is at the Union Station around town, where you'll be able to get a bike and ride it from one place to another that's close, and where hopefully it'll encourage bike riding across the city.
Do you know about when that'll start?
That, too, should be starting soon. I think they were just waiting, and I don't know whether or not it happened, to get approval from the Board of Alders.
I thought that happened. Maybe not. Okay. Okay. YMCA Railroad Building in Cedar Hill.
Yes.
That was empty and run down for a long time. The people with Ocean Management have now reopened it. 21 units, market rate, there on State Street as you get close to the Hamden border in Cedar Hill. Studios, 1,000 to 1,600, 2,100 for one bedrooms. What do you think? Have you seen it?
I haven't been to see it, but I've noticed that old building. I always thought that it had a lot of character, and I'm really glad that it's being utilized.
And I guess they want to do market rate, but not quite as expensive as downtown.
Right. And, you know, I think that, again, you know, years ago, we couldn't pay a developer to come in and do market level housing. For some reason, people are wanting to move back into cities and into apartments.
And it's an opportunity for us.
It's an opportunity for us. Ultimately, it helps to stabilize the taxes that people have here.
Anything else coming up this week we should know about? I guess you're going to another conference on energy, cities and energy?
Yes. Uh-huh.
What's that all about?
Well, it's just to make sure that we're up to date on what's going on nationally around energy and how we can encourage and know how to sort of weigh and measure the kinds of proposals that we're given and to be aggressive and try to get folks in here to do some of the things that make it more accessible to people.
To remind people from the beginning of the hour, you want folks to help out with Puerto Rico.
Yes.
Our friends and in some cases family members who are dealing with just devastation. An island that might not ever fully recover. To go to GoFundMe on the web, look up New Haven for Puerto Rico with hyphens between all the words. Mayor Harp, it's nice to have you back today. And WNHA, thanks for coming in.
All right, thank you. It's great to see you again.
And thanks everyone for listening. We're going to take it out, the Afro-Semitic Experience performing I Wish I Knew How It Feels to Be Free from the CD Plea for Peace. This is Paul Bass reminding us all that we do know what it feels like to be free. We just have to book our flight. Book your flight and fly free with us all day and all night here. WNHH Radio, your home community radio.